quarterbacks today. Joining me to do that is Kevin Ostreicher. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. I wish we were doing this season review in mid-February instead of mid-January, but unfortunately, that's just how the cookie crumbled for Baltimore this year. It was an unfortunate season in a lot of different ways, and as we all know, there's a lot of change on the horizon for this team.
Yeah, it's some of the scary stuff. I think that affects the cornerback group. It affects the whole team, really, as all the coaching changes are so up in the air right now. I don't expect many of the coaches to return. I'm sure they've got a couple guys in mind, but I don't know for sure who's going to return.
Yeah, at this point, I wouldn't expect a lot, if any. I mean, in all the reports coming out, once that John Harbaugh deal is finalized, which maybe by the time this comes out, it will be, because it's pretty fluid. Harbaugh's apparently looking at a lot of his assistants to come over with him to New York, so I'd expect a lot to follow him over there. There are usually one or two holdovers. I mean, it's probably smaller positions, you know, assistant coaches or, you know, guys that didn't hold position coach roles, but I think we're going to see a very new staff with very little turnover from last year.
Right. I would agree. I think we'll see quite a, basically an entirely new staff. And that is a really difficult hiring problem to solve when you don't come in with the same coach from last year. It's one of the additional taxes of changing head coach is you have to get a bunch of people, but anyway, they are where they are. They entered this last season looking very solid at the cornerback position, and that broke down pretty quickly, as I would say it. They had Awuzie on that offset contract. We didn't actually know how good he was going to be, of course, yeah. But Jair Alexander at a reasonable price, you know, brought him in for $4 or $5 million was the figure, and he didn't work out at all, obviously. Brandon Stevens had left for the Jets, and people were basically slamming the door on his rear end in a way that was pretty distasteful. But you know, I think probably it was a positive for the Ravens in terms of his play with the Jets, at least that he played reasonably well, and the Ravens will get a decent comp pick for him.
Yeah, the offseason for the Ravens last year, I mean, I thought it went really well for them. Obviously, Stevens had a great year the year prior, but, you know, kind of regressed a little bit last year. And I guess, like you said, put together a pretty solid year with the Jets. But what those cornerback contracts you talked about, you know, Chidobe Awuzie was coming off, and he's been injury riddled throughout his entire career, where he has healthy years and he looks great. And then he has just years where he plays 8 games. And that's just kind of been the story of his career. And so he got cut by the Titans, was getting paid by the Titans. And, you know, he wanted to go to a place where he could win and, you know, get paid by Tennessee, kind of have a rebound year. And that's what happened for him. And we're going to get to that, I'm sure, over the course of the show here. But with Jair, I think that was the disappointing one, because there was so much depth there heading into this season, where you had Marlon and Nate and Awuzie and Jair. And then you're like, all right, well, you also have TJ Tampa, and that corner room looks really great. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jair is not practicing and not playing, and you're kind of, you see regression from certain players, and, you know, like Chidobe played great, and, you know, that was a really bright spot, but it did feel like there were a lot more challenges at the group than I thought there were going to be.
Right. So we talked about the coaching stuff here a moment ago, but Don DeLessio is the secondary coach, and Chuck Pagano is the some sort of senior assistant and secondary coach. I think the odds are tremendously against Pagano being back, an older guy who, you know, there's an opportunity right now to change, and a new administration is not going to have loyalty to him. DeLessio is another matter. He's a younger guy that the Ravens may really want to retain.
I could see it. I mean, I'm totally in agreement with you on Pagano. I think that was more of like I think Pagano even said as much, where maybe it was Harbaugh, where they had a conversation, and that was purely relationship based, in my opinion. Right. So if anything, he'd follow Harbaugh to New York, but, you know, Baltimore is not an option, in my opinion, for him. But yeah, I'm intrigued by DeLessio. I think that, you know, while again, there were more challenges that I would have liked to see out of that group, maybe a new staff comes in, and I don't know how it will work if they hire a secondary coach and then he's kind of stays on or co. I don't know how it would work, but, you know, like we talked about earlier, there's a chance that a couple of these assistants are retained if, you know, they're well respected enough. And I think DeLessio is. So, as a younger guy, I'm definitely not opposed.
I think it was also, if I recall, it was his first year with the Ravens. He'd been 5 years in the league, but he worked with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think it was Chiefs. Yep.
So anyway, I think that one of the real central kind of tenets of what went on was that the cornerbacks really suffered from an ineffective pass rush.
Yeah.
The Ravens couldn't get a lot of quick pressures this year. They had a lot of trouble effectively getting after the quarterback. They did get some within 3 seconds, but they didn't get as many quick pressures. Got beat by a lot of quarterbacks who got the ball out quickly this year. Lots of breakdowns as well in the secondary, but I think you have to maybe start by talking about the pass rush.
Oh, 100%. And I talk about this all the time. The secondary and the pass rush are married to each other, you know,
pitching and fielding.
Yes. it's, and I think people sometimes lose sight of that. And I understand how frustrating it looks when, you know, this team, and for a team that hadn't gotten beaten deep a lot, especially if you want to look at that first Pittsburgh game where the Steelers have struggled to, you know, throw the ball deep, and all of a sudden they're throwing deep with DK Metcalf all over the place. You know, part of that is guys just can't cover for 5, 6, 7 seconds on every single play. And that seems to be what was happening consistently where, you know, I mean, we'd probably be here for 5 hours if we were to go through all these games where these quarterbacks were sitting back and just patting the ball, waiting for guys to get open. And yes, I mean, look, the corners, based off of expectations, weren't as good as I thought they would be. But a huge part of that is the fact that, like, these are NFL quarterbacks. You know, I don't care if you're Lamar or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow or Mahomes, or if you're a rookie, if you have that much time to throw the ball, you're going to probably find guys open and make those throws. And it just was too much of a theme consistently where the pass rush and the secondary weren't married together. And it was a huge detriment to the defense. But you're muted.
Sorry about that. One thing I really like to fight on this show is hyperbole. And the one thing I'll say about that is it doesn't take an extra second and a half per play for the quarterback to be a lot more effective. It takes more like an extra 0.2 seconds per play. And I think that's maybe the order of magnitude we're talking about. It's not like they created tons of Lamar Jackson play extensions. I can remember one big one where they, there were a few during the season, don't get me wrong, but they, on the final 4th-and-4 play against McCarthy in Minnesota, they only rushed 3 men, or maybe only been only 2, but it was 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And it took 10 seconds for Green to deliver a quarterback hit on that play, which was remarkable that he finally got there and he threw incomplete on the final play just as that occurred. But Anyway, another thing that hurt the Ravens, I thought, is the safety play took a step backwards. They had good play early on, in late 24 from Hamilton and Ardarius Washington. Ardarius Washington, of course, hurt on pop, only played the last 4 games. We're going to get to him later because we're talking about him with the corners here. But they started with forcing Kyle Hamilton to the back end and using him alongside a rookie, Malachi Starks, who it took his time to get accommodated to the position. Starks didn't have a good year in terms of yards per target allowed. You could point to all sorts of things about that, but most of the rookie top safeties, with the exception of Emmanuel, but had really bad yards per target. Watts was over 11. Makuba was 14.7. He was the worst in the whole league among the guys who played free safety primarily. And I had this through week 15, and he improved slightly from there to the end of the season. Starks was over 9 yards per target, over 10 yards per target. He's at 10.1 yards per target through week 15, and he actually got improved down into the nines by the end of the year, but still not a good year at all. 8th from the bottom in terms of the free safety group. So they had a lot of trouble at that, and Gilman's acquisition probably helped a little bit. This much because of him, and a lot more because Hamilton's up front and is taking a cornerback role.
Yeah, that was kind of my stance on Gilman. Is it worked really well for the first couple weeks just because Elohi Gilman was a body that you could move Hamilton around with because he was there. And then as the year went on, I think it kind of regressed. And this, I guess, is a point for the whole defense, and it does apply to the corners. This was a bad tackling team this year. And, you know, I think that, for me, Gilman led that charge, but obviously he was not the only one, and it's not all Gilman's fault. I mean, you know, Marlon struggled with tackles, just the quarterback room in particular, and, you know, we can go on and on and on about that. But, you know, I do think that with the safety play being what it was at times, like we talked about earlier, that it caused a lot of breakdowns and miscommunications of like guys are expecting help over the top, but it's not there. You know, you're passing off somebody and there's nobody else there. And it's just, it caused a lot of issues that, you know, like you said, we saw so much of that kind of be erased at the back half of 2024. And they did that just based off of pure, like, we need to do something here because our defense is so bad after that second Cincinnati game last year. And it worked. Kyle Ardarius played really well with each other. And it, I mean, that defense had a historic turnaround last year. At least that's what it felt like. It was really good. So it was disappointing because I think that we've been talking about miscommunication. And look, no team's going to be perfect. There are always going to be miscommunications in football. I'm not expecting perfection here. But I do think that there were more than I anticipated there being, especially because, I mean, we know how much can the Ravens invest, not just in the secondary, but even just particularly the cornerback position with, you know, not, and I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about first round picks.
Capital, yeah. Sure.
And you can apply that to safety as well, just with the entire secondary. And, you know, this kind of goes off a little, but they've neglected other positions while investing a lot of their time, or not, I guess, time, but capital in money into the secondary position. And for what they have invested, it was decently disappointing to kind of get the returns on that corner room and secondary with the safeties, like you said.
They're not in a good spot for how much they've invested in the position. I think that's a central thing. That Marlon Humphrey is on a big deal still. There's some savings from cutting him, but it's not enough to really be super enticing. But it might be enough to move him to safety. And his he had an injury-filled year. He's coming off an AP one year the year before, but his fall off was so stark, it's not even funny. I don't think it's entirely injury related. I think there's some concessions to age that are built in there. At least I can't ignore the possibility that that's likely. But he was 76th of 76 by PFF coverage grade. And that was a big part of them getting worse. And part of that, obviously, Marlon had played primarily slot the year before. When Hamilton moved to the back end again, Humphrey moved the slot, was still a physical presence there and a good player. That may be the player that may be the cornerback position he's best at. And it's not available to him except maybe on third downs and dime packages when Hamilton moves to the slot. Because I think they're going to, whatever they try this offseason, I think it will be focused on Hamilton keeping that slot position, which was another problem, was that they didn't really prepare for that in the way that was necessary. That was a complaint we had all year long on Friday Morning GM, on other shows I did, about they just did not prepare with enough safeties to protect their cornerback room and protect the flexibility of Hamilton.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, losing Ardarius, it was tough, but that injury did happen in what, May, I think it was? Or like it was, they had time. Yeah,
they had the whole offseason.
Yeah, they had time to prepare for it, like you said. And I think it was disappointing because we were kind of wondering, and, you know, not that like the names would have, I don't know how much impact they would have, but we, you know, everybody was talking, all right, is Justin Simmons going to come in as a veteran, or how are you going to maneuver us? Like, could you have an undrafted guy make it? Like, just if there was someone that stepped up, or if you brought in somebody, it could have been interesting.
Well, the problem is they kind of relied on some guys like that. And, you know, yes. we won't forget Lowry. He was he was one of the stars of camp and certainly of the preseason. And he made the team as a UDFA, and he promptly let the team down and had to be cut. And then it got, you know, it's a double whammy because he gets cut for some not so great play. And the Ravens would have loved to keep him on the practice squad. But the Colts, of course, poached him as soon as he went through waivers. And that sucked. So anyway, it was what it was. Obviously, they hoped the Jaire Alexander thing had worked out better. It did not. Jaire got all kinds of compliments about his commitment to weight training. I don't know how much time they spent on the podium talking about how Marlon Humphrey and Jaire Alexander were leading the weight training group at 6 a.m. I don't think that ended up being a deciding factor in quality cornerback play.
No. And I remember that was a week straight, maybe, that we're there. That was being talked about. And, you know, like you could tell that, I mean, the Ravens had high hopes for Jaire. You know, I think that still it was a correct move to make when you have that potential of having a guy come in. Now, depending on who else was available, you could have maybe used that money elsewhere. And hindsight is obviously 2020 based off how it went. But I mean, if you have the potential to bring in somebody like Jaire, who we know when healthy is a really good player, still kind of had fallen off in some categories, run support, et cetera. But, you know, for whatever it was, like 4 or 5 million up to 6, like that's a risk that I personally would take. But again, it doesn't work. You end up getting some value back in trading him, but I mean, it's very minimal at that point. And I think that that was probably what they were relying on in terms of like, okay, Nate's going to take a jump. Marlon's going to come off of his great year and continue to be good. And you know, even if it is a slight drop off, it's not going to be what we saw. And then you have guys like, okay, like Chidobe Awuzie is this wild card. We can see what happens if he doesn't work out. You have Jair, and then, hey, maybe if he's injured, TJ Tampa can step in and play some role, which I know we'll get to TJ in a little bit here. But like they had the depth in place and the plan in place. But then it just got really weird in terms of like, okay, well, Jair's not practicing and Marlon's regressing. And it went very south very quickly. You're muted again.
Started even before then in camp when Kone and Longerbeam were both hurt and lost for the year. So the 2 6th round picks, it's not like both of them were going to be stars or anything, but one of them at least would have made the team and hopefully been a contributor in a way that would have given you some positive hope for 2026. Now they're starting over with both guys, and they both have lost a year of development because it was an IR year. It's not a practice squad year. So they've lost one of their 4 years with the Ravens. And they're starting over in year two. And it means the Ravens need to, again, apply significant resources to the position. And I think the biggest thing the Ravens have to determine for 26 is, do they go ahead and move Humphrey to safety now? Because I think we're almost at a point where they either have to make a large bet on Humphrey returning to some of his previous form, which they can do, or they have to bet on some of his skills being portable to the safety position, which I think is probably a good bet, and move him to safety with the option then maintained to bring him back to corner if that's where the need is during the season. They have to cut him, and they have to get the $7.3 million of savings from doing so. So there's a lot of cap constraints still for this team, and Humphrey is at least on the last year of his deal. Roquan, it's a little headier issue because you have a savings this year, but you have an even bigger savings next year, and there's a big cost of, even though it's the exact same number, by the way, $7.3 million, it becomes a multi-dimensional problem with Roquan in terms of deciding if you want to wait a year to do it.
Yeah, and there is still value in having Marlon Humphrey on this team, especially if you do try the safety thing. Like, I think as a versatile safety slash corner, like, he does provide value, but it does come down to, like, would that 7.3 help you bring in a top guy in the trenches, or would that help you get another position, and do you feel comfortable enough with the guys that you have? So
let's start with this as a question.
Okay.
I'm not eager on re-signing Gilman, and Gilman was going to make an amount that probably would have been, you know, $4 to $5 million, let's say, might have been an amount that he might've made. The jump up to signing Humphrey for seven, or, you know, effectively signing him because you're keeping him. You could even ask him to take a pay reduction, by the way, or extend him with a contract at a lower level now, which there might be some benefit to both sides in doing so. Obviously, it's a risk reduction for Humphrey. But you could have him for only a little bit more than Gilman. And I'm going to basically say that since you're on the open market for Gilman right now, the amount you pay for Gilman is going to be a market-based price relative to other guys you have in the cafeteria you can select from. And, you know, when Marlon Humphrey, Gilman, and the other guys out there are the options, and Humphrey at $7 million is one of them with the flexibility he potentially gives a team, that's the option I kind of like. How do you feel about that relative to those other two things, going to the open market for a guy or just re-signing Gilman, who knows your system, maybe after a year?
Yeah, I'd honestly just probably bring back Marlon at that point, I guess keep him at that point, mm-hmm. because, you know, I'm not really privy to re-signing Gilman regardless. I think that he's someone that I wouldn't bring back. I think, again, a lot of his value came early in the fact that he just helped Hamilton move around a lot more. And if it's for $4 or $5 million, I'd rather have the versatility of Marlon. And then he also, like, while Marlon did regress, you know, if it's only that 7.3, are you getting someone who also has that versatility and has the familiarity? And so, look, I'm not like saying Marlon played great this year based off what I expected from him, because he didn't. But at the same time, maybe a role change is just what he needs in terms of, like, we're not going to ask you to do what you used to anymore. We're going to kind of help you do this, but still have the option available. Hey, you need to go down and play in the slot some because we need you. Okay, well, you can still do that. Or, you know, we need, because he was like, I took away his fruit punch nickname and called him right place, right time, Marlon Humphrey, because it felt like he was always in the right place. Some of those weird tip passes and errant throws. So he still kind of had a knack for the football. I mean, what was it? The forced fumble on Breece Hall or whatever it was in the Jets game that really helped out. So again, I'm not saying Marlon's a bad player. It's just about like, okay, is he worth the money? But it's not like they'd save $17 million outright if they were to get rid of him. It'd be the 7.3. Now, I'm not sure, Ken, if the post-June 1 is – I haven't done work or look into that.
What I tell everybody on that listens to this show, please, this is one of the most important pieces of advice I give you. The post-June 1 or the pre-June 1, which would really be – he's got a roster bonus associated. So he'd have to be cut now and then designated as one of the two guys they get for post-June 1. But anyway – that's just accounting. It doesn't matter. The Ravens have lots of ways to move money from this year to next year. Lots of ways. So don't tell me about what they're going to save this year if they take the most, efficient is not the right word, most aggressive way to push money into the future. So you don't have to tell me that. It's the savings is, if we're just going to all talk the same language. It'll be English here instead of talking, GAAP. And you know about what the gap is in accounting basis. That's why that was somewhat funny. But anyway, no. Some people don't know that. And so we're gonna talk about assigning these in the same way. But the 7.3 number is the number that's on the basis that everybody else is on. Roquan, this is the same 7.3 million. Yep. It's some people say, well, it's 20 million. Everybody's telling me it's 20 million. Well, sure, if you do the same other kind of phony baloney accounting, yes, it's 20 million, but then you owe that in the future. You don't get out of paying those dollars. And one of the biggest mistakes you can make is treat the cap like a one-year problem. It is a multi-year problem. You can't just get out of this year's cap problems and pretend like they never existed, that because they'll hit you up again next year. And that's the reason, by the way, that Odell Beckham, the gift that keeps on freaking giving, was still on the Ravens cap for 10 million this year.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, long story short, Lamar, once they figure that situation out, and Steve made it very clear, like, it's going to get figured out one way or the other before free agency starts, like, that will free up however much it frees up. And Lamar right. either come back at the same cap number, like Steve said, or the extension will happen, or the whatever will happen, and that'll be great. And that'll free up a lot of money for you. And like you said, there are other ways to do it, too. But to me, just kind of getting back to Marlon, like, if there's a clear upgrade out there that you can get, sorry, go ahead.
I got to stop you on this because the Lamar thing is also a very big deal in terms of the team planning. So it is not appropriate for Bisciotti to have said what he did. He's correct. And he's kind of positioning it maybe for Jackson himself that, hey, it doesn't matter if you sign this extension or not. But the truth of the matter is it really does matter because the Ravens need to know if Lamar Jackson is going to be here in 2028. He'll be here in 26 and he'll be here in 27 unless the Ravens trade him. But he'll be here. If he's not signed for 2028, the pressure is really going to be on the Ravens to trade him. And other investments that they might make with money that Jackson freed up, they might decide they didn't want to make. And the biggest one I can give you is Tyler Linderbaum. I don't want any part of Tyler Linderbaum if I'm not signing him in order to get Lamar Jackson signed.
Sure.
So it's very important that we not like just pretend like the accounting for these dollars differently really helps. They need to know Jackson's here for between 3 and 6 years from now, which is what they'll get with a Jackson extension.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to go off.
No, you're fine. I agree. And I think, again, Steve said that, like, hey, we don't want to do the whole like bringing him back and all that. Like, they want a reset on the plan to make sure he's there. But at the same, I was pretty surprised when Steve said that. I was just like, oh, like, it's a really big peek behind the curtain. So I was like, yeah, we're going to do this if this doesn't work out. But at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, but the extension is still priority number one. And that is definitely how it should be. But if I'm just going to, we'll play the game of like Lamar does get extended here. That will help. That will help a lot. And so I think that if you can find a clear upgrade for Marlon and, you're paying that guy $10 million. And he plays the role similarly to Marlon, and he still is like the maybe a slight downgrade from Marlon, or I guess at $10 million, you have to be an upgrade at that point because you want to get better play. Then okay, like that's a conversation we can have. But if you're just going to bring in, if you're going to replace Marlon with another undrafted guy or a later round draft pick, I don't value that for this team right now. I want the experience, I want the veteran presence. And again, like I think Marlon still has value in a different role, but that would have to be the starting point for me to keeping Marlon on the team.
I don't think they can trade Marlon Humphrey. And the reason is there's that $4 million roster bonus, which comes due, which they'd be then on the hook for if they don't, or I don't think it matters. As soon as they have to pay it, then some other team doesn't, which means it could increase his draft, trade value slightly. But I don't think he has any guaranteed trade value at $7 million such that you want to take that risk. So I don't think they can trade Marlon Humphrey effectively. Now, they can trade Roquan Smith because he's got a year left under contract. So if there were a taker on him, that'd be another matter. I think that's pretty much off the table at this point. I think Roquan is too important to keeping the defense together. And I'd really worry about it unraveling for the very minimal cost incrementally that he has this next year. But let's get back to Marlon. Yeah. And talk about his season, because it's a very sharp decrease in production. He had multiple leg injuries, of course, played 77% of the snaps, which is much lower than normal for him. He was an AP1 slot corner in 2024, had a really good yards per target number of 6.3 in 24, off to 9.2 in 26. So he got beat deep a lot, and it was mostly on the outside.
Yeah, there were multiple big plays given up by him, and a lot of it was disappointing because, again, like the Ravens defense, I mean, they like to do the bend don't break thing, and they don't like to let their defense get beat deep. They'll let you take the short and intermediate stuff, but it just felt like a lot of the time here, like it was just one-on-one, like straight up just Marlon gets beat. And you know, whether it was DK Metcalf in the Pittsburgh game or another, like that's one that sticks out to me the most. And there are a couple of others, but you know, those are plays that the Ravens like despise giving up. And it was just too frequent this year from the secondary. And you know, a lot of that, I mean, sometimes it came on like a 3rd and 18, you know, like the Packers in that Packers game in week 17, there were multiple like 3rd and 9, 3rd and 18, yeah. Like huge conversions that the Ravens actually turned themselves into a decent third down defense, but it didn't feel that way in some of these big moments. And I thought Marlon was unfortunately on the receiving end of some of those, especially when it came to getting beat deep. And, you know, whether it's, you know, he's getting older, the injuries, like whatever it may be, it just felt like he couldn't keep up as well as we'd seen him in previous years.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He was targeted a lot more frequently this last year, 100 times in 556 coverage snaps. That's 18% of the time he was targeted. It's very rare for a player to be targeted that much as a percentage of the total targets for a team, because if you think about it, you've usually got 7 coverage defenders that your targets are kind of split amongst. And so your corner is not going to get beat that much or is not going to get targeted that much. But that's the way it worked out. Had 5 penalties. That was actually down from 8 the previous year. And he didn't have any DPIs, which you want to find small victories in the 2025 season for Marlon Humphrey. He had 71 yards on 4 DPIs the previous year, and he had 0 in 2025. So that was nice. And I think he still was the physical presence at slot corner that we've become accustomed to. But he didn't get to play very much slot corner this last year, because the only time that position was available was when 2 things were true. The Ravens had a second outside corner that they really trusted. And sometimes they only had Marlon and one other guy, usually Wiggins, on the outside. Or the other time is when, and the other requirement was that Hamilton had to move from slot to dime on those plays. So that just doesn't leave very much. I mean, you know, 31% of the snaps are thereabout. They had some use for Marlon Humphrey. I mean, and obviously played a lot on the outside where he wasn't as good.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that, especially with those two, Marlon and Kyle, is that it's helped that they are so physical. And like when you mention it, like when Marlon's on the slot and Kyle's at dime, like whether it's a run play and they can just out leverage smaller blockers and get to the edge, and Hamilton can do his thing, and they're just so disruptive at the line. And again, not even to mention like the whole, you know, being able to cover it and that just being better. But I think that they lost some of that this season, which I think was unfortunate, because I think that that's a really big part of what they should do. It helps them a lot. And with Marlon and kind of where he is at this point in his career, I think moving him around a little, because again, when Marlon wasn't there, he was kind of like, okay, we're going to play him outside, but you know, he's not as effective out there. And like, you know, that teams are going to be looking that way because they know it too. And so, but you want to, like, Hamilton also is effective there, but it's like, what do you want to do with some of the personnel packages to maximize everybody. And it just, you know, it felt like when Marlon wasn't there and he was on the outside, you just knew what was coming at times. And it's different because Marlon has been, he's been really good for a really long time. And, you know, I don't want to like discredit what he's been able to do over the course of his career, but you also know this is a what have you done for me lately league. And, you know, this year it wasn't great for him. And I can't see them throwing him out there again in that role. I think that'd be a mistake. I think you have to move him around and be that safety slash slot guy.
Right. All right. Well, I think the nice thing you get if he does, you've got a lot of nice things because there's portable skills that he takes with him to the safety position. You talked about some of the right place, right time. You call it, I call it off man interception. So he very frequently the last 2 years, and he's had what, 10 interceptions, I think, the last 2 years now, 6-4. But anyway, a lot of those were made not on his coverage assignment. So he's peeking into the backfield, reading the quarterback, and then moving over onto somebody else's man to undercut them for a pick. Or to make an over the top interception in some of these cases too, which is usually the tipped ball. You get, I mean, that's a very portable skill to safety. Being able to read the quarterback will serve him well. I think any decline he's had in terms of speed, you get. And then I think that the other thing, the flexibility, it's worth saying again because I can't overstate how important it is that he could move back to slot corner if that's where you needed him because Hamilton got hurt. Or possibly number two is he can jump up on an individual play to play opposite the slot receiver if you want to rush Hamilton off the slot. And that's something the Ravens had a really good success with rushing outside corners in the past, particularly in the 2006 season. It's been a few years since then, but they rushed Samari Roll a few times, and they rushed, I think Samari Roll actually got a sack versus Atlanta that year, and they rushed their other corner, who would have been McAllister that year. A fair amount from the outside, and they did it because Dwan Landry was a guy who could jump in from safety to an outside corner spot and play a serviceable man coverage responsibility.
I would love that. I think that's perfect. And, you know, the Ravens have, I think with the creativity that I think at times lacked this season, using Marlon in a role like that, I think he can be it if we've seen him blitz off the edge. And I don't know how many times he's actually done it. I mean, he has what, a sack, Marlon, or two?
He had a sack. He had a fair number of.
He's definitely done it. So, I mean, I think that using him in that role, and again, it's just like, how old is Marlon now? He's 29. Is that right? 28?
He'll be 30 in July.
So he's 29 now. I mean, this is kind of like, this is not like a, Marlon's going to move to safety. That never happens. No, it happens a lot. I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, Jalen Ramsey is the most, you know, I guess he's the one that it happened to last year, but I mean, we could go back in history years and years and years.
It happens all the time.
This is kind of what happens. Yes. Yeah. And all these guys, and it's essentially a second lease on their careers where it's a guy fizzles out at one position, but you still have those portable skills, like you called them, and you're able to extend your career by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, however many years it is. And I think that's kind of where we are with Marlon now, where it's not like he's not a good player anymore, but he still can be effective in a different role.
So the summer of 24, I asked Marlon if they had had discussions already on whether or not he would move to safety at some point. He said that hadn't happened. And then it turned out he had a great 2024, so it wasn't time yet. But now that 2025 happened again, I actually was kind of hoping at some point during the year they would make the move. As it turned out, I don't know that they really had the outside corner depth without relying on a player like TJ Tampa more than they did. But I think it certainly would have been better for the Ravens to move Humphrey to safety, take their chances with Owe and not acquire Gilman. I think that would have worked out better for the Ravens. And obviously, you know, they ended up having to trade for Draymond Jones and whatnot. Would have been a few extra cap dollars, I guess, they would have absorbed by keeping Owe. So it's a multifaceted problem, but I think that given what the season that Marlon turned in at corner, I think he would have helped the team more at safety.
Yeah, I agree. And they rolled over, what, like $10 million of unused? I don't remember what the exact number was. I think they rolled over a decent amount, if I'm remembering, correct?
Yeah, whatever they have, they need more, just the same way you can account for dollars in the future. So whatever they have, they need more.
Yeah, but I would be curious to know how that would have worked out. I mean, again, and I'm not sure Owe has the same year that he had once he got to Los Angeles. Like, again, I think that people look at that particular move and were like, oh, you look at Oweh's ear. You can plug those sacks just in outright. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Like, obviously, it wasn't working in Baltimore. It worked a lot better with Jesse Minter out there in Jim and in Los Angeles. But he's a much better player than I think he showed in Baltimore. And obviously, he showed that in Los Angeles. And I do want to caution it of like, I don't like to play the game of, you know, if this one play didn't happen in a game, just add those points on automatically. And the Ravens, no, I mean, you know, it's a whole game that plays outside of that play. It's the same thing with player production and kind of the system they're in and the place that they are.
I'm looking at three. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Four positional changes. I'm looking exchanging Tampa for Humphrey on the outside, and I think he wouldn't have done any worse given the year that Humphrey had. I'm looking for Humphrey for Gilman at safety, and I think you get no worse than an even there, and I think you probably get a plus for Humphrey for Gilman. And then I'm looking for Oweh over the other choices they had at outside linebacker, which were terrible. And I'm not projecting Oweh for 10 sacks or whatever the hell he got. Yeah. I'm projecting Oweh for getting a similar pressure rate to what he'd got with the Ravens in the past, not necessarily the sacks. And when I look at those things, I think you got probably three pluses you would have netted, with the big question mark being, what would TJ Tampa have done on the outside if they really had to rely on him?
Yeah, and in a season that came down to him as field goals, the clock hit zero, that probably would be enough to push him into the – again, how far do they go in the postseason is a whole different question. But, you know, what would have been interesting to see how that would have played out.
Would have saved his job for a week, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's talk Nate Wiggins a little bit. 91% of the snaps in year two. He was injured a little bit. I thought Wiggins bravely took on a bigger role. Reportedly, he asked to do some traveling himself with the number one receivers, which was nice. Dropped off in yards per target, meaning he improved from 7.0 to 6.6. So that's a nice move. And opposing passer rating at 74, held onto the football a little bit better. I obviously the Ravens are banking tremendously on Nate Wiggins. Now, there was some report that he had surgery. Did you hear this?
I did not hear that, no.
Okay. I've got it secondhand, so I don't know for a fact, but I thought he might have had something. And of course, at the end of the year, he had some sort of injury he hobbled off with. And, you know, you just have to worry that, oh, maybe it's an Achilles. Maybe it's a cleanup procedure, in which case, no big deal. You know, players have those all the time. They don't tell anybody. But if it's an Achilles, you know, partial, like whatever it would be, I'd be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, if it is that, definitely. I'm not sure, but I do. Yeah, I don't know if that injury was big or not. I mean, he didn't return to that Pittsburgh game, so yeah, I don't know.
No, he did return.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's my memory is failing me then. But yeah, so I'm assuming if he returned, then I hope it was just a cleanup thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see what. I guess because, after the season, you don't really get that information. So I guess we'd find out as the offseason progressed. But I mean, I thought Nate was like for a year or two. And again, he had such an exceptional year one. And obviously, a lot of people were hoping he built off of that. And I thought that he did in a lot of different ways. You know, like you kind of mentioned there, he had like one or two pretty poor. I mean, was it the Green Bay game or whatever it was late in the season was. Mm-hmm. Atrocious from him, but again, I'm not expecting perfection. I thought overall Nate was really solid this year. He was a really big help in their secondary. They obviously needed more than him, but he's a guy that like I feel really good about moving forward, and someone that, like, when you ask about, all right, who's in that circle of trust for you next season defensively, for me, Nate is in there for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of their, obviously one of their biggest playmakers that they'll have to depend on. He's one of the best back shoulder defenders in the game. I really appreciate that about him. You know, after you've had Brandon Stevens and the quarterbacks with impunity know that he's not going to find the football on you, having a guy who trusts his makeup speed enough to peek back into the backfield occasionally and come back and get a piece of the football with Wiggins is good. And what's nice about that is you have these big boundary X's or big boundary receivers, period. Could be on either side of the field, but typically Wiggins, it's going to be Wiggins playing right corner and defending that X side of the field, we'll call it. The guys who like to do that usually are limited in other ways. And it's the guys who don't trust their makeup speed who play a little bit too soft. And Wiggins does trust his makeup speed, so he's more likely to break on the football. And that really takes that option away from the quarterback, because the risk associated with being undercut is usually a pick six. So that's something I really love about his game that makes him very valuable. But the paradoxical thing is, more than almost anybody else, he seems to line up too far off ball on more plays. And I don't know what's causing him to lose his mark on this properly, but he's often, you know, 8 or 9 yards off ball when it might be a third and six kind of play. And what's going on here with this?
It was one of the biggest frustrations all year for me. It was like consistently over and over again, guys. And I mean, yes, playing super off. And I mean, they got burnt on it a ton, and it just felt like there were not a lot of adjustments with it. I just feel like hopefully they learn from that mistake, and everybody learns from that mistake.
I mean, they learned from that mistake. They should have learned the next week or the next day.
Oh, absolutely.
So absolutely. I got to lay that at the feet of either D'Alessio or Pagano, or possibly at Orr's feet. I mean, yeah. Orr is ultimately responsible for the defense as a whole, but D'Alessio is responsible for the corners. And Pagano was supposed to be, you know, a quality control guy for the secondary as a whole, who should be teaching technique, but also making sure that it's being followed properly. And you have this many times where you get beat in off coverage. And I don't want to hyperbolize this, because it's not every play. It's just a number of important plays it occurred that is the bigger problem there. And the way the ball was out quickly for opposing quarterbacks, they had to be more alert to it. They could have played more man defense. That was something that came up. Play a little more press if you want to, and just try and figure out how that can work with the kind of corners you have. But anyway, they did not seem to get that straightened out.
No, it was definitely frustrating, and one of the big reasons why they just struggled the entire year there. And again, yeah, it wasn't every play, but man, did it feel like it sometimes. It really did.
What else to say about, he had 5 penalties, down from 8. That was nice. Had 3 picks. I mean, the big thing coming out of 2024 about him was he couldn't catch the football. So he'd had 1 interception late, but he bumped that up to 3. I don't see that as a central problem. There were times when he might have had additional interceptions that he didn't get this year, but he's getting his hands on a lot more footballs now, which is exactly what they need. And anyway, he's the guy who's the Ravens absolutely need to get a good year out of, probably along with Kyle Hamilton in that secondary. They need to see ascension from Starks. I mean, I'm not saying that they, you know, there aren't other young players who need to come through, but those guys make up 2/3 of the cornerback room now with Hamilton and Wiggins.
Yeah, and you know there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with Awuzie, if he comes back or not. You know, Marlon is obviously up in the air in terms of what they could do with him. Like, this is a bigger need than I think people might be realizing. Because look, all the focus right now is on the trenches. It's on the O-line. It's on the pass rush, and rightfully so. But that doesn't mean there aren't other areas of the team that also need attention that, you know, and again, like the Ravens have spent there. We talked about it, whether it be draft capital or money. So I'm sure they'll do something. But right now, Nate is that guy. And then below Nate, you're just kind of like, I don't really know what they're going to work with there right now.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some hopes, but they're just hopes right now. They're going to have to spend additional draft attention slash capital on that group somehow. Chidobe Awuzie was one of the really bright spots on the defense, acquired as a UFA. He was on an offset contract from the Titans, so the Ravens end up paying him just the vet minimum. The Titans end up paying most of the, I think it was about $8 million he earned last year. And he overperformed it almost every way you possibly can. His yards per target was 6.1, which was might have been the best on the team. I think it was. 13% target rate is solid for a corner. 84.5 opposition passer rating. And he only had one penalty the whole year, which shocked me when I saw that. I mean, he had a lot of targets to have only one penalty on the year. But that's a hell of a season from a corner. I'd be shocked if he does not move on somewhere to get a fairly sizable multi-year deal. It could very well be the Giants or the Chargers are the teams the Ravens are competing with if they want to talk about it.
Yeah, Giants makes a lot of sense. I feel like that is one. And that was the plan, I think. Like, I think that was what everybody wanted out of this. And obviously, I think the goal was Super Bowl when Chidobe came here. And, you know, he's like, all right, I'm going to go play for a contender, rebuild my value, and then go get a multi-year, because he was still getting paid by Tennessee. So the whole thing was, all right, he can go somewhere and not have to worry about how much money he's making with the Ravens or whoever he would have signed with if it wasn't Baltimore, have an opportunity to compete. And that's what he wanted. And so I think that it was, yeah, I mean, he was incredible for them. Multiple huge plays, whether it be pass breakups in the end zone or, you know, sticky in coverage with a guy. And that's who he can be when he's healthy. And we saw that like for multiple seasons with him. It's just been the injury proneness that he's had over the course of his career, where he'll either play a pretty fully healthy season or he'll be injured for half of the year. He obviously suffered a major injury. I think it was with Cincinnati with the ACL, if I'm not mistaken. So I was really happy the way that he played. I think a lot of people, I mean, the value was immense for them. You know, I wish they could have gone further just with team success, because I thought that he was awesome. And again, I see people, you know, clowning on him for slipping on the Calvin Austin touchdown. I'm just like, you know, that's not who Chidobe Awuzie was this season. That was a fluke and, you know, not even really, he just lost his footing. You know, I think overall for the year, he was really good for them. And if they do end up losing him, it's going to be a decent loss if they can't replace that production, because the Ravens have had success finding some of those vets on 1 year deals. I mean, 2023, obviously they were awesome with that, with, you know, guys like Clowney and Van Noy and, you know, along with that list. Yeah. Darby was awesome for them. So, you know, it's a position that Eric DaCosta has proven, like with Darby, like you said, and now Awuzie, he has an eye for maybe finding that vet corner who is, you know, maybe on the downturn, but they're also like, there's some work to do there.
Yeah. They've had a pretty drum-like pattern of getting some skunks. So this is a position where they've often gotten two guys as veteran corners that they bring in, and then one of them works out and one of them doesn't. And it happened again. Darby was a terrific find, but the guy that they'd signed that year that people thought was going to start was Rock Ya-Sin, and he was terrible. And it couldn't get on the field. And this year it's Awuzie and Jair Alexander. And I think most people would have bet for Alexander to be the larger role, but Awuzie started playing as a sixth defensive back in dime packages. And then every time somebody got hurt, his role was increasing to the point where he played about half the snaps on defense for the year. By the way, one of the other things I didn't mention, had a great year in terms of yak per play, really great downhill player. When the play was in front of him, he took people down right away. Only 2.3 yak per play, which is exceptionally low for an outside corner. You'll often give up plays over the top and whatnot. And it's not like he gave up none over the top, but he didn't give up a lot, but it had, you know, 30 yards of yak on top of the catch.
Yeah, he was great. And, you know, the way that he performed, I think, was a super pleasant surprise, especially when, you know, the yak after plays. And so with corners, it's a little different because, you know, right as you catch that ball, it's important that, you know, okay, the corner who's covering him can bring him down. So when I talk about the Ravens being a bad missed tackling team, there were some yak plays that was like a screen pass and there are five guys missing tackles and all of a sudden you catch a ball and there's 50 yards of yak down the field. But with the Awuzie, it's like, okay, guy catches the ball, guy goes down. And we didn't see that from everybody on the roster this year. Like, again, there were missed tackles all over the place, and we did see other players struggle in that category, in that area. So I appreciated that fact with Chidobe Awuzie. I didn't know the numbers behind it, but I did notice that that was something that he was good at. And it was refreshing to have that, as opposed to some of the other play that they got, especially with the missed tackles this year.
Yeah, that definitely a multifaceted positive year. I don't want to limit it to that, but he had a very good year overall. Let's move on and talk a little bit about TJ Tampa. We're running a little bit behind here. He's a guy who, you know, the Ravens probably thought, we got to get something out of this year. We got to find out who he is because he'd been on the team the year before. Had a limited number of snaps, played pretty well in those snaps, but a guy who they still don't know who he is my central thing about TJ Tampa. And they're now in a position where they almost have to rely on him for more snaps this next year.
Yeah, at least to see what he is, like you said. I mean, at this point, you're entering year three, lost a lot of his rookie season due to the injury and, you know, didn't get a lot of opportunities. And this year, again, I think going into the offseason, I think a lot of people, you know, when they were looking at the corner room outlook, it was like, yes, Marlon's there, Nate is there. But then you kind of have TJ Tampa, who I thought people were excited about. I think people understood they needed at least one vet in there just to, you know, not have to rely solely on TJ if someone went down. And so I think that was the whole Jadobe Awuzie thing. It's like, okay, Jadobe Awuzie comes in, but TJ Tampa maybe can rotate with him, or they can find a role for TJ in some way. And obviously it didn't work with Jair and he barely played. But I think when Jair came in, it's like, okay, what's the confidence level with TJ here, and how do they view him? And because, you know, if you trust him enough, you know, Jair is a great player when he's healthy still, in my opinion. But like, you know, if you thought TJ could do something for you, why are you bringing in Jair? So I thought that was interesting, but I agree. It's like, you know, all these corners that they've drafted and they haven't utilized. I mean, one that is not, it's not comparable, but it's Jalen Armour Davis, I think a lot of people, and he was obviously riddled with injuries during his time in Baltimore.
That was really the problem there.
It was, okay, are you going to give him opportunities when he is healthy or not? There are other guys like that as well. So I it'd be unfortunate if TJ fell into that category. I think he is talented, but you kind of have to wonder like where the Ravens are on him right now, because if they don't have a role for him next year, I mean, you're just losing years of experience that he can get on the football field.
So he is in danger of becoming a special teams ace. And this is, you know, maybe it was a problem originally and not, I mean, he's a fourth round draft pick, so you hope he's not just going to be a special teams guy, but he had 4.59 speed coming out of college. And that is, as you drift through the 4.5s at corner, is where there is a sharp drop off in the likelihood of you being a good player. It's just the sad fact of life for guys who run in the high 4.5s. It's an even sadder fact of life for guys who run above 4.6, by the way. But Tampa at 4.59, you know, was a guy that there would always be questions about. And he was the guy before this last season that I thought, they're short on safeties. How about we see TJ Tampa at safety? I mean, he may be a guy. And one of the reasons is that he'd been such a very good special teams player. And by the way, wasn't a matter of Tampa not being active for games this year. I think he played all 17 games. He might have been out one, but he played 352 special team snaps split across five units. So he's a core plus special teams player. Core player plays four. And if you play on the field goal block unit or the field goal kick unit as well, then that would be an extra one to boot. But there's very few players who play on more than five units. So he's absolutely central to that. He could be the next Anthony Levine. But I don't think that's what he wants for himself right now. I think he wants to see if he can leverage what he can do at corner and get some real opportunity there. I think this is the year where they're going to be forced to go to him some, if they don't, maybe even both make a move during the draft and use one of their top couple of picks at corner, which I think is a possibility, or go to the free agent market and get somebody again. But either way, I think Tampa's actually pretty central to their plans for 2026 at this point, given how good a special teams player is. He's definitely going to be active on game day.
Yeah, definitely active. And I think one of the big things that, you know, I'm trying to keep in mind for all of this is, you know, if this was a John Harbaugh-led team, I think there'd be a lot more like, okay, we kind of know what, you know, Harbaugh and this coaching staff might want to do with some of these guys. We just don't know who's going to come in right now and who's going to be, you know, the leader of what's going on with personnel decisions and game day decisions and how they view some of these guys. So I am curious, because I think TJ is very talented. And like you said, I mean, he doesn't want to be a special teams ace his whole career. I'm sure he wants to be a star corner, which I think he has the talent to do, but it's just going to be a matter of like, you know, is TJ Tampa a Minter guy or a Stefanski guy or a Flores guy or whoever comes in to be the next head coach. Like there are going to be multiple different guys who probably get bigger roles because the new coach is going to come in and be like, hey, I want to use this guy. And there are going to be other guys who had big roles last year that just aren't going to be there and just not going to be back and have those big roles.
The benefit for Tampa in all this is his own personal safety to have a 6 or 7 or 8 year NFL career. He's really increased the probability with 2 years of very high quality special teams play, because at the very least he'll be a Harbaugh guy for the Giants.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it may not be with the Ravens. The Ravens, I they need to really extract value from who they have here on the rookie deal. And Tampa may be a guy like Malik Harrison, Anthony Levine, Albert McClellan, all the guys who hung around the league then for 8 years as a near vet minimum guy. You got the benefit. The VSB is, I mean, TJ Tampa could be staring straight ahead at that 2 years from now. This year, he's under contract for this year and next year, but in the 28th season, he could be staring directly at that. It's not too early for him to think about that's a, you know, if you're applying to a lot of college, you have a fallback school. That's his fallback position on his NFL career.
Which is not bad. Not bad at all. So
14 tackles on special teams with 4 misses. That's a ton of tackles on special teams to have for a year. But second of all, the missed tackle rate, it seems a little high to miss 4 out of 18 because it's over 20%. But missed tackle rates are a lot higher on special teams than there are on defense. Because you have a lot more open field tackling, a lot more risk of miss there.
Yep. I think he has a solid career ahead of him, but I think there's the potential to have a really great one. Either way, I think he'll be in the league for a while, I'm sure.
Well, let's talk Keon Martin for a little bit. One of 3 UDFAs who made the opening game roster, played 144 defensive snaps. He had some really nice coverage statistics, 4.5 yards per target being his headliner. He did allow 2 penalties and a 104 opposition passer rating. But one of the big ones is he didn't allow any play over 12 yards. So they really kept the plays in front of him. He played slot corner when he was in there. And a lot of it was in those early season against Kansas City and Houston when the Ravens didn't have anybody on the field. I mean, Nick Lowry was playing safety in one of those games. Ruben Lowry. I keep calling him Nick Lowry. The kicker, right? The kicker. Yeah. Ruben Lowry. But anyway, Keon Martin, I think he's earned his way to certainly being part of the 2026 calculus at this point.
100%. I mean, this is a guy that I think obviously earned it over the course of training camp in the preseason. I thought continued, and again, wasn't called upon a ton, but gave you enough where you feel pretty good about him at least being able to show more in his second season and maybe taking on a bit of a bigger role. But in terms of someone who is, I think a low risk guy to have on your roster and who can potentially be a high reward player for you if it all continues and he progresses, I thought it was, again, not a lot of time for Keon Martin, but someone who I thought flashed some potential for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at him, he's got 3 cheap years left. That's 3 years of runway. The Ravens need to really try and develop him and improve him and extract value from him. By the way, Martin, another guy who played well on special teams. So a guy who's certainly in the picture in 2026 for what's going on. He's, in a sense, a guy like that. If he had a bad special teams year and he doesn't show up at all at cornerback, he could well find himself on the outside in 27. So his future is not secure at this point, but he's really improved his chances for the Ravens to just be considering how do we look at this player over the next 3 years.
Yeah. And there are a lot of calls and there definitely will be to, make multiple big splashes, not just corner, but everywhere, trenches and whatnot. But like you said, you need guys who have those cheaper contracts. Draft picks are still valuable. It's important. But a guy like Keon, who he's not coming in as a rookie. He'll be a second-year player. He had experience. I think that's very valuable to a team that, again, you're looking for answers at corner, not named Nate Wiggins. And I think Keon Martin has a good shot to, maybe make a role for himself. Who knows?
That's a good way to put it. Ardarius Washington returned for the last 4 games of the year, I thought played pretty well. 61 snaps at slot corner, primarily in dime. He was on there. Probably was on there for a few nickel snaps after Hamilton got hurt against the Steelers as well. So he had a little bit of non-dime play that he got in this year. What to say about this? I don't know whether or not they re-sign him. And it really is a question. He won't be super cheap, but then again, I don't expect him to play for the vet minimum. Certainly, I guess the Ravens could, if for some reason Patrick Ricard goes off to play for Harbaugh. And by the way, this is another player you could lose to Harbaugh.
Yep.
Right there.
Yep.
If Patrick Ricard goes off, and you know, I'll give you a double whammy on this. Harbaugh and reportedly this deal still hadn't been made yet in terms of Harbaugh's contract. And reportedly the hangup is on Harbaugh's control over all personnel decisions. Think about how much additional pressure there'll be on the Ravens UFA group if Harbaugh is the guy who has sole authority over personnel decisions. I mean, scary. It's freaking scary.
And that wouldn't be just this offseason, by the way. That'd be, I mean, there are going to be holdovers and guys for many years that are going to have Harbaugh connections for the Ravens. And so I am curious to see how that goes, because, you know, you can look at multiple guys. Like, I'd assume they bring back Linderbaum again. Of course, if the whole Lamar thing goes the way that it goes. But, you know, like, you're looking at others. Like, would he bring in one of Likely or Kohler to help, you know, group with D.L. Johnson? And, you know, you mentioned Ricard. And, you know, there are a lot of guys that could go follow him to New York. So I think, like, for me, I would love to bring Ardarius back to Baltimore if I'm the Ravens. I think, again, like you said, he's not going to be vet min, but I think his value, I predict, will probably outdo what his contract is, because I think that he is still very undervalued. And again, with the injury situation, where he has been an injury prone player over the course of his career. And I think the teams will see that and say, hey, if we're going to throw a 2-year, $10 million deal, just throw a number out there. Like, if you're going to throw that out there to him, you know, is that money going to be wasted on IR for a year and a half, or are you going to actually get the production? Because I think Ardarius can play like a 3-year, $20 million player, $25 million player, but it comes down to, will he be on the field? I think Baltimore can hopefully bring him back, because I think that they see his value maybe more than other teams do. I don't know.
Right. I think so too. I think he's already got strikes against him for his size that a lot of teams aren't really happy with. His year this year was, I thought, pretty good, but he did allow a fair number of yards and a pretty high quarterback rating against. So his yards per target, and a very, you know, I think he's only targeted 6 times this year, is not a really stable number that you'd be concerned about him, you know, being beaten that badly again. But a guy I think again is another valuable safety slash corner for the Ravens, where they could use another guy like that. And in particular, they could use him if anything happens to Hamilton, because you got to have another guy who could step into that slot spot. They could go with Keon Martin. They could go with maybe even Tampa. Probably not Tampa. Tampa's probably an outside guy only, but they could go with Keon Martin, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I'd really like to have an additional player that you could trust in that position. Anyway, we'll see how Washington goes. But I'm like you. I mean, what you just said about all the Ravens who might end up going to the Giants, it's going to be a huge pain in the ass. And it's not like the Jets, where the Jets only got the dregs from the Ravens of all of the, you know, the bottom end.
Yeah, same with the Chargers
down, of their roster. I'm afraid, you know, one big name that you didn't mention is Patrick Ricard. I'm afraid Patrick Ricard could go.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that the new coach comes into Baltimore and says, we want to use a fullback. I mean, like, that's a big thing too, and I'm sure Harbaugh will. So that's one I'm almost penciling in at this point. It's not guaranteed, obviously, but that would not shock me.
Right. They've got to kind of overpay him for it. And the Ravens have one VSP card to play. And they actually now have a couple different players who would be valuable for. It could be still Tylan Wallace coming back. Wallace is another guy who might go to New York as well, by the way. it could be that either Ardarius Washington would get it if Ricard does not get it. So they could pay Washington $2.5, $2.8 million, something like that, and only count as the vet minimum against the cap. And that might be competitive enough to keep him in Baltimore for 2026. I'd probably bet more yes than no on that. I'd almost certainly bet yes if it weren't for the Harbaugh factor, that he might say, you know, let's go out and get him for $3.5 million and make sure we beat their VSP deal. Kind of
thing. Yeah. I like that. I like that plan for them. And I guess I agree. The only thing that'd really be holding them back is, like, if Harbaugh knows how valuable Ardarius is and says, you know, I'm going to throw more money at him than that, like you said, and that would probably be the only hangup.
All right. We don't need to talk about Alexander at all. We talked
briefly about Kone and Longerbeam, but they're going to enter, you know, camp. They'll be in camp. They'll be guys the Ravens hope can produce, but they're both coming off significant injuries and coming back. And now I think it was Kone who was hurt in the game, and it looked really awful in the
yes,
by the right pylon. Longerbeam, he had a long, slow struggle with an injury in camp, and then eventually, I think, might have personally decided to have surgery. And they're from some of the language used and some of the frustration with the injury, I kind of got the sense that Harbaugh was hoping it'd be something he'd play through. So we'll see how that works out. But hopefully Longerbeam has not lost his taste for the organization in general. And he's a guy that will do something. Kone, I think, probably has a little bit more in terms of physical gifts than Longerbeam too.
Yeah. We had seen in that game that, I mean, he had if I'm remembering right, he had a play or two that was impressive. And I remember you saying you were impressed with him over the course of training camp, if I'm not mistaken. Am I wrong in that with Kone?
I think I was more impressed by his preseason. Training camp, honestly, I don't think Kone made a bunch of plays, but the game might have been the Colts game.
I think that's the one I'm remembering. Yeah. So it was something where he was impressive in some way, shape, or form. And so, to see him go down with an injury like that, especially with how gruesome it was really unfortunate. But, and that was my thing with the Ravens in general. They had 11 draft picks. I didn't expect 11 draft picks to make the roster. And, who knows what that situation would have looked like if both those guys were healthy. I mean, I think that, Kone would have probably made it, but, would Longerbeam have had a spot, or would they have stashed him on IR anyway? I think that's an interesting conversation. Because then would Keon Martin not have made it over Longerbeam?
Well, they had three UDFAs make the roster. So they had room for a lot of draft pick players this last year.
Or like Lowry, like one of those guys. So it's going to be interesting, because I think that both those guys, there's potential there. They're young players, but the Longerbeam situation was definitely interesting. And I'm curious to see how Kone responds. I hope he's able to come back and be really effective.
So let's talk about 2026 needs, and we'll be real brief about this since I think we've hit on a lot of this already. They need to, I think the draft priority in corner is actually very high. I know that's an unpopular opinion. No, we need linemen. We need offensive linemen. Draft offensive linemen every single round, or draft defensive linemen too, and don't go anywhere else. But the fact of the matter is they're very short at corner, and they've got to figure out how to piece together a group here that probably will not include Marlon Humphrey in that role. If it is, it'll be kind of as a fallback, or I hope it'll be as a fallback position, as not as their first choice.
Yep. I would hope so. And to me, if there's a talented player again at 14, I know a lot, it's offensive line, defensive line, pass rush. I've seen wide receiver takes as well, but corner is a position where, again, wouldn't be my first choice at 14, but if it's the right player, and I haven't, even had a shot to look over this draft class much just based off everything that's going on, but I wouldn't be shocked if they spent their second rounder on a corner, and you expect that guy to come in and play for you, and maybe they take two corners, depending on how they feel about Kone and Longerbeam. There are multiple avenues here where they have the picks to do it. I don't know if they're going to try to consolidate some of this capital this year. Maybe they could move up if they like a guy, which I think that they should. But I'd expect, like we kind of talked about, one or two vets to come in on pretty cheap deals. And then I'd probably anticipate them spending a high up draft pick on one of those guys to help, because I don't think Marlon will be back in an outside corner role, like you said.
Yeah, well, it'll be frustrating. That's for sure. And then the last thing that we really don't have any sense of how the coaching in the secondary is going to be. If they don't have a defensive minded head coach, they're going to need some real strength at the position coach level. And I do get the sense from hearing Steve Bisciotti talk about how he'd love to have paid for a paid vacation for John Harbaugh. There would have been value in that for the Ravens, that if he paid for the paid vacation for John Harbaugh, then he wouldn't be competing against him for talent. He'd be one more year removed from all of the relationships he had by the time he has a chance to act on it. It has real value.
Yeah.
So paying for that would have been a nice thing to kind of protect the roster in a way. But the other component of that is that that coaching staff, whatever they put together in terms of coaching staff, is going to very quickly have to figure out who these players are and what they can do for the Ravens. Because
it may be all new people, and they're going to have to figure it out very quickly.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when you have a guy in a place for 18 years and obviously the relationships, you know, like, you know, Stanley's been there forever. And, you know, obviously Lamar is entering year 9 at this point. So, you know, there are a lot of guys that, you know, you have those deep connections with, not just like a personal connection, but like, you know, what they like, you know, in terms of strengths and weaknesses and where they like to put the ball here and what they need to work. And so you're right. Like, a new coaching staff is going to have to figure out like, okay, they're starting from scratch there essentially. And that to me is a big thing. And so, I mean, relating to the corner position, you know, how do they see a guy like Marlon Humphrey? You know, where's their value with TJ Tampa? You know, how do they want to deploy a Nate Wiggins? Or, you know, obviously Kyle Hamilton will be the big piece there in that secondary, but there's a lot that's going to have to go into this offseason. It's not going to be a normal one, that's for sure.
Right. All right, Kevin, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, appreciate you having me as always, Ken. Always fun to chop it up with you. You can find me over on the Locked On Ravens podcast. We do 5 days a week plus more daily Ravens coverage over there. It's in both video form and audio form. So on YouTube, you can find it in video form and audio form wherever you get your podcasts. And we have a bunch of different stuff like bonus episodes, instant reactions, and a lot of stuff that we do over there.
All right. Other folks out there, please keep feeding the hashtag film study mailbag if you can. I want to do more of the 1 to 3 minute videos. Keep that up during the off season for, you know, one every couple of days, maybe two per week at the slowest, because I think people are enjoying that format. And if you're not enjoying that format, by the way, I'd love to hear from you as to the reason why. So just send me a DM on Twitter. In that case, you don't need to plaster it all over one of the videos you don't like, but I would appreciate it if you sold me a DM and why. You know, you don't just think it's appropriate, or you think it's an overuse or an overexposure. And I'll take the advisement seriously. I will. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you as always, Ken.
And I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.